All right, so anybody that was asleep because you had a late Saturday night, I hope you're awake. If nothing else, it might have achieved that. But I think, I'm sure a lot of you actually noticed a few things wrong with that, apart from my absolutely useless editing. Okay, and I can hear those of you in IT saying, please stick to your day job. But the thing is that, you know, the first thing that's wrong is, you know, it says, should you choose to accept it, that mission? Well, let's face it, it's not really a choice we have. We have many choices, but once we have chosen God and he has chosen us, then actually our mission is more a matter of obedience. And Hudson Taylor said, you know, the Great Commission is a command to be obeyed. It's not an option to be considered. So, and I think that's the truth. But the other thing is that for those of you that didn't recognise that music, that's obviously the Mission Impossible music. Well, you know, impossible is obviously not a word in God's vocabulary. And it might feel an impossible mission, but it most certainly isn't, not for God. And I think the other thing is that, you know, all of those words, actually, they're true. And they're in the Bible, and we know that's what we've got to do, and we want to do it. But it's quite overwhelming, isn't it, when you see all of the things that we really ought to be doing, being all of those things to people, being the salt, the light, getting out there, preaching the word, going to all nations, healing the brokenhearted. I mean, the list goes on. But at the end of the day, it is actually quite simple, and our mission actually gets whittled down to two things. It's loving God, and it's loving people. Now, you know, our mission to love God in many respects, though we falter and fail at it, is actually quite straightforward and quite easy. Because let's face it, God's perfect. You know, he's quite likeable, really, isn't he? Hasn't really done many things wrong. But the loving people bit is a little bit harder, isn't it? Now, I had a perfect illustration of this. God always does this when I'm thinking about something. He'll give me a nice little example. And when I was just thinking about this thing of loving people on the train on the way up here, God put right next to me somebody that was really unlovable. And basically, you know, I'm sure he was a lovely guy, but he was just so weird. And by the end of the journey, all of us sitting around the table really didn't like him. You know, and it was probably just a mental health issue, but he was a real attention seeker and he was really very irritating by some of his behaviour. But that's the thing, isn't it? Loving people is difficult. And actually, it's quite an adventure. And the definition of adventure is calculated risk and uncertain outcome. And I often think that that is exactly the same as climbing mountains. Yeah, it's adventure, it's calculated risk, but it is also very uncertain outcome. And that is what our mission is like. So I think really where I'm going with this is that our mission to love people is actually in many ways very similar to having to climb a very big mountain. Now, one of the most frequent questions that Rob and me tend to get asked is, well, you know, how did it all start? How did your adventure of climbing these big mountains start? And, you know, they understand how we started the small things, but, I mean, how do you really get to climbing something like, for example, Everest? Well, our answer is often starts with this. A little bit of tipple. Because, yes, you know, it's true, you're down the bar, you know, with some of your friends, a little bit of tipple, and you have some great crazy ideas about things that you're passionate about and you want to do, but then when you sober up a little bit, you've got to make good on those promises. But actually, you know, ours really started with a slightly different cocktail, and as Mags has mentioned, it was really a cocktail of chemotherapy for Rob, and that was what, you know, Rob going through that whole process, cancer for the second time, it galvanised us into action and swinging our life's priorities round to what was important, which at that stage was no longer careers, it was really enjoying the time together while we knew we'd got it. Our doctor said to Rob, you know, in the next 3 years, there's a 50% chance of your cancer coming back for the third time. And that focused our minds. But actually, you know, it wasn't really that, to be honest, that started things. You know, I mean, often I say that that's really what galvanised Rob and me into action, into taking this time out of work to climb mountains. But the truth is it actually started with something different. And what it started with was this. It actually started with us falling in love. So at this point, I'll introduce you to my better half, Rob. He's from Australia, and there he is. Both looking a little bit younger, I have to say, 10 years ago. Rob now has even less hair than he's got there, and I have more wrinkles. But the point is that, you know, our desire to go climbing really actually comes back to our love for each other and our desire to spend time together. You know, so our desire for the mountains in some respects was fueled by our passion for each other. And I don't actually think it's a lot different with reaching people. You know, ultimately reaching people is fueled by our passion for God and our relationship there. And I know for me that the minute, the day, the hour that I kind of lose sight of that passion, then that's when I become weak in the place of wanting to reach out to other people. And so I think for all of us, you know, our passion of God really does underpin our desire for the mission, or in this situation, for the mountain. And so I think, you know, it's a question of rebooting. And I have to do that, you know, I mean, I have to do that on a regular basis. Sometimes it's a minute-by-minute basis to reboot that love for God. And I just think, you know, sometimes we all have different ways of finding and hearing and seeing God. And I know for me, in case it wasn't very obvious, one of the ways that I really find my passion and love for God is rebooted is by being in his creation, is by seeing how incredible it is what he has built. And that's even looking at a flower. You know, if I come out of our flat in the morning and you just see the tiniest of flowers, it's seeing God's miracle in that, and that changes the day. Now, you might say, look, okay, I understand that, you know, your passion for each other might ultimately make you enjoy spending time together, but surely that passion can't fuel you to climb Everest. I mean, give me a break. Well, in some respects, you're right, because actually we have to have passion for the task as well. Now, this is Everest. You're looking at it, the north face from Tibet, and you're still about 25 kilometers away, and yet it still looks a pretty big mountain at this point. And I remember the first thing that the expedition leader said to Rob and me when we were thinking about actually committing to climbing Everest is he said, above all, although I think you've got the ability to do it, I don't know the outcome, but I can tell you one thing. If you don't desperately want to climb Everest, you won't be able to do it, and you might kill yourself. And so he was making the point that if we weren't passionate and committed to this task of climbing Everest, of climbing that mountain, then actually it really wasn't going to work. And I know, you know, it's so easy to be, you know, even here this morning, here in worship, and it is wonderful. You're in God's presence and you're fired up, or whether you go to a Christian conference or whether you're just having a good time of fellowship. And that's like all the excited talk we had about Everest before we went. But then you get there and you're facing this big monster of a mountain, or you're out there with your friends who aren't Christians and it's not going so well. And all of a sudden it actually becomes quite scary, the thought of actually how you're going to cope with this big task in front of you of reaching out and touching them. And I know when we arrived at this mountain, it was only the knowledge that God was with us that stopped us from taking one look and running in the other direction. But I think the thing is that quite often worrying about the terrain is what kills our passion. And I know when we arrived at Everest, it was the fear. There were so many fears from the statistics that actually made us want to run away. And I know sometimes when I'm talking to friends, it's the fear that can actually kill my passion for wanting to witness to them. And I have to bring myself back to looking at Jesus. So the question is, how do we actually fight this fear and rekindle, you know, that love? And I think obviously, you know, we need to pray and we need to get others to pray for us, goes without saying, but also read a good book. Now, obviously, you know, the Bible is our ultimate inspiration. But in terms of Rob and me for the mountains, our inspiration actually came from reading a book about the seven summits. So all I can say is be very careful about what you read, because it can lead to things. And actually, you know, there are plenty of stories, aren't there, out there of God's faithfulness, you know, that people will talk about their testimonies and what he's doing. And I think they all help whet our appetites and help us dream. And that is really important, to have our imaginations stretched in the department of reaching out to other people, of taking us out of our comfort zones to new ways and new areas of how God can work. So although this morning we're not going to focus as much as I did yesterday on the mountains, I thought what I would do is give you a little bit of that appetite whetting process and just allow you to enjoy some of God's creation with a few photographs. And these are from a bunch of different mountains all around the world. Thank you. Now, I know some of you might sit there and look at that and think, well, that might whet your appetite, Jo, but it doesn't whet mine. And you might not think that that makes you want to go climbing hills, and I completely understand that. But I think you know where I'm coming from. It is that being inspired by what God is out there and doing that actually causes us to dream in new ways about how he can use us and just work through us in our daily lives. Now, it's all very well talking about this passion for God and passion for the task of reaching people, but actually, you know, how far is that going to get us? Is that going to get us the whole way, or is there something else that we need? And I think, you know, for Rob and me, you know, it's all very well being passionate about the idea of climbing mountains and for our romantic summit kisses. But actually, that wasn't the only thing that was going to get up there. And what we also needed to do was take action to make that dream a reality. So we needed to go and obviously prepare. Now, when it comes to preparation for mountains, one of the first and most obvious things that we had to go and do was actually to do a little bit of training and get ourselves in shape. And I can tell you that when we left work, Rob was a year out of finishing his cancer treatment, I'd just gone through an operation, and we were a state. And I know Mags can certainly testify to this, and indeed Gus, because Rob and me were on a holiday with them in Skye, I think it was. And we turned up, and we were basically at the front end of going off to climb all these mountains around the world. And we were just a complete useless heap of physical nothingness. I was in bed the whole week in the cottage because I felt ill. And Rob was sort of languishing somewhere a mile and a half behind Gus up the hill. So, you know, and there we were supposedly going off to climb these mountains. So, you know, we didn't look good. And Mags, in her infinite wisdom, brought the Lord's word into our life, which was that he was going to watch over our coming and going. And boy, did we need that. But the point is that was the beginning of a long phase of many, many weeks, in fact, months of training, hard physical training, to get ourselves in a position where we could even think about start climbing. And that wasn't even climbing the seven summits. That was just basically getting ready to try ourselves out at some high altitude above 6,000 metres. Now, of course, you know, for daily life, we don't need that amount of physical training, do we, to cope with the rigours of whatever we've got to do. But we do need to do some training. And, you know, I actually think, and I don't know if this is just age creeping up on me, which is why I'm beginning to think this, but I actually think that, you know, one of the things that we have to be really disciplined with and really train ourselves in is actually sleep. And time out. And Mags can sit there chuckling in the front row. She listens to me say this. But actually, I think sleep is probably one of the most spiritual disciplines and things that we can do. Because I know that if I'm trying to be loving and love people and reach out to them, you know, if I'm sleep deprived, then, you know, I'm just not very good. I don't like people. I don't like myself. I don't like the world. You know, you don't feel great, do you, when you're sleep deprived? It's just how things are, and it's a fight. So I think, you know, let's be, and this might seem a bit simple and a bit unspiritual, but I think often it is just having those Sabbath moments when we step out in whatever way that we do that. We get our sleep and we take our rest. And I think that helps us to be loving. And I, you know, God is a practical God, okay, above all. You know, sleep was his invention as well. And, you know, like when it was Elijah and he was, you know, rushing away and cowering from Jezebel's threats, and he went off and he was actually feeling really suicidal after this amazing man of God moment. And actually one of the first things that an angel came and said to him was, well, you know, get up and eat, have some food. So it's like, you know, God wasn't saying, you know, get up and go and do your next mission, whatever it was going to be. He was being practical. And I think so often with us, it's easy to, you know, it's right to have these noble goals, but I actually often think for all of us, it is a question of just getting adequate rest so that we can be in that right place to go out and be fruitful. But there is more that we can do to be prepared, and that's being ready. Now, just going back actually to talk about sleep, I know that I had some classic demonstrations, and I'm sure many mothers, maybe fathers as well, will know about this from having children, is that on expedition, it was repeatedly a sleep-depriving environment where you couldn't sleep because of the difficulties of altitude, the temperatures, tent mates snoring. I mean, you name it, it was happening. Basically, you were lucky if you got one good hour's sleep a night, and when that went on for months, it was just soul-destroying. And Rob used to tell me that I'd gone completely gaga because he used to sleep better than me. So, you know, it does really impact our view on the world. And the next thing, really, is being ready is really important and part of our preparation in the mountains. And, you know, that's what enables us in the mountains to actually achieve our mission of getting to the top. But it's not just that. It enables us to quite usefully not get killed as well. And what I'm talking about when I say being ready is thinking through all eventualities. And this really here is a little illustration of that, because what I'm doing is I'm testing out my oxygen cylinder at base camp on Everest to make sure that all the regulators and the gauges and the flow rates are all right. But the other thing I'm doing is a tiny detail where I'm actually checking that my goggles fit perfectly around my mask. Because if once I was much higher than base camp, which is only 5,200 metres, once I was in the death zone, I had a tiny gap of even a few millimetres that I couldn't prevent, and it was too late to fiddle because you've got so many gloves and mittens on, then actually that was going to allow a fraction of UV light in. And at that high altitude where the atmosphere is so thin, it's so powerful and dangerous that it would actually burn your eyes in a matter of minutes and cause you to be snowblind. Now, of course, down here, you know, it would be painful. You wouldn't be able to see for a few days, but you'd get over it. But up there, if you're snowblind, then you can't climb. And if you can't climb, then you can't climb down. And that's you. Curtains. So, you know, it might not be that dramatic on a day-to-day basis for all of us, but we do have to be prepared for every eventuality, and I think it's that readiness. Now, I think any of you that, you know, really are Bible whizzes will already have cottoned on to this concept of, you know, being ready, because basically it talks, doesn't it, about the sandals of readiness in Ephesians. And but don't worry, I'm not about to advocate wearing socks and sandals. That was purely a mountain fashion. But I think, you know, for us, being ready as God's children, that is all about being ready to answer for the hope that is in us, in whatever way that we are called to answer about it. Now, Charles Finney said, make it an object of constant study and of daily reflection and prayer to learn how to deal with sinners so as to promote their conversion. Now, it's true, we do need to be soaked in the word to know so that we can take the most of opportunities to promote the conversion of people. But, you know, there is really not a formula, is there? There is most definitely not a formula to this. And the key really is being ready to share our whole lives. This is not a, you know, a formula, it's our whole lives that we're talking about sharing. And John 1 John 5 says, those who believe in the Son of God have the testimony in them. And so I actually think this is great news, because what John is saying here is actually, you know, this isn't about the formula for how we're going to promote conversion in sinners. John is saying, if we believe in the Son of God, we have that testimony, and it's in our lives, every aspect of our lives. And Rick Warren says, you know, the message of our life actually has four key parts, and those are our testimony, our life's lessons, our godly passions, and then the good news of salvation. And so that's really interesting, I think, because that brings a whole new sort of, well, perhaps not new, but a much broader sort of element to this reaching out to people. You know, it's not just about the good news of salvation and saying it in words. It's actually our life itself. It's the lessons we go through. And I know for me, it's been sort of something, I suppose, unexpected, but so often many of the things that Rob and me have experienced on the mountains and the lessons that we've learned, those in themselves have ended up somehow being that message to people. So it might not always be something really direct. It has been our testimony. Or also, Rick Warren says, it's our godly passions. It's the things that fire us up. And that's what people notice about us. It's those things that people pick up on. So the key is, I guess, just being ready to share, let people in on those aspects of our lives. Now, when it comes to mountains, the next thing you have to do is practice. And this was Rob and me in the Alps doing a little bit of a warm-up, basically, before we headed off to our first expedition in Nepal. Now, that expedition actually went horribly wrong and ended up with Rob basically nearly dying from having, well, it was an obstructed intestine, but the complication was is that his blood had thickened pretty much into sludge, so he was at risk of a heart attack or a stroke. So all of that training for us didn't amount to anything in the first place, apart from a very horrible life-threatening situation. But the point is that you still have to practice, because actually that puts you in the right place for going out to these places. And I think, you know, when it comes to mission, you know, practice make perfect still holds, doesn't it? And, I, you know, whether it's for sport or anything else, it's sport-specific training. You know, if you want to climb, you've got to climb. If you want to ski, you've got to practice with skiing. If you want to talk to your friends and witness, then you've got to practice doing that. And you actually do get better, and I'm sure you all know this. But one of the interesting things I found is that just by having to kind of publicly get so many interviews from media and whoever it is, and quite often, especially, well, obviously if it's Christian media, but even for normal media, they might ask a question. They might ask you to say, well, what is it? You know, what is this faith that you have in God? What difference does that make? And every time you practice telling them, you know, it helps. It makes you better at expressing your faith. And it's just sharing. And sometimes it's good to talk to Christian friends that we've got, you know, about how you're going to share that. Because I know sometimes in an interview, I've tried to explain it one way, and you come back at the end of it and think, oh, I didn't do a very good job there. And you chat about it, and then the next interview is a bit better. And sometimes it is hard, isn't it, just to find the right language where you're going to meet and you're going to engage with people. Because as Christians, I know it's so easy to forget. We have our own language, don't we? We have our own lingo. But that's not always what means something to the world. And so it's finding words and language that's going to work with those people. But of course, it's all very well practicing your climbing and practicing how you're going to talk to people. But when you get out there, inevitably, the environment changes. It becomes a lot more hostile. And that was what we found. You know, here, you're actually 50 meters off the summit of Everest. And that was simple climbing, okay? But we were up so high that it actually made it incredibly difficult. And that's the thing, you know, we have the same testimony, we have the same life messages to give, but sometimes we are in an incredibly hostile environment, and basically we just have to adapt and keep taking the steps. Because there's times when you're climbing at these sorts of altitudes, and this was in Nepal on a different mountain, and everything inside you is screaming to stop and turn round. You know, your head is pounding, your heart is thumping in your chest, you can barely breathe because the air is so thin that you're gasping, you might feel sick or have a terrible cough. There's a whole bunch of things that are going on, and you're just like, this is too hard, I can't manage it, I've got to turn round. But that's what it's like sometimes. I find that, you know, you start talking to a friend and it's just like, it's difficult, you know, and it's not easy. And it's finding that way through. But, you know, you keep taking those steps, even to move the tiniest of distances, because the tiniest of distances is worth it. And if you keep taking that, eventually you'll get there. And I know here, same situation, higher on Everest again on the Northeast Ridge. This is about 8,600 meters, highest rock climbing in the world. Again, it wasn't super, super difficult rock climbing, but the point is you're doing it in what feels like fancy dress. You can't really see what's going on because you've got mask and goggles. And some of you might say, well, you know, why would you want to be doing that? Because it all seems a bit like hard work. But I know that you guys will understand why we want to put ourselves through this hard work. Because as Christians, we all understand that, because we know about that glorious inheritance that's not going to spoil or perish or fade. And that's it, isn't it? You guys will completely understand why you might want to put yourselves through something that's difficult, because we know where we're heading. And we know it's worth reaching out to people, okay? And in a small way, it's the same when you're climbing mountains. You know what you're heading for, and you know it's going to be worth it. Now, of course, it's all very well doing this strength training and you know, practicing and being fit and ready for anything. But one thing you can't forget to do in the mountains is you can't forget to get dressed up, all right? And that's because it's a little bit chilly, all right? So this is an average summer's day on the way to the North Pole, and only minus 30, so not really too bad. Bit of wind chill makes it colder. But Sir Ranulph Hines once said, you know, there is actually no such thing as bad weather. It's only inappropriate clothing. And how true is that in the spiritual realms, yeah? I mean, you know, it's like, let's face it, if you go out of a tent and it's minus 50 with the wind chill and you haven't got your gloves on, then should you really be surprised if within 30 seconds you're literally on the verge of getting frostbite? No, we shouldn't. But, you know, that's obvious to me, but how often do I forget, you know, in the spiritual realms, you know, and I step out unprotected, I haven't really put the armour of God on, or I go into an area where I'm feeling vulnerable, and you get nailed, you start getting frostbite, and then you come back all hurt and surprised, and it's like, well, what an idiot. And that, you know, that does happen, and I know, you know, time and time again, it's just a question of, you know, whether it's for me, it would be perhaps asking Rob to pray about one of my, you know, areas where I feel weak. And, you know, when we were climbing, both Rob and me had poor circulation, so we knew we were weak, so we had to pay attention to detail. Otherwise, we were going to lose our fingers and toes. We've got them all, but we had to pay attention to detail. And it's no different in the spiritual realm. We've got to pay attention to detail. We've got to know our weaknesses, and we've got to protect ourselves against them. Now, that's all well and good, but there are times that we had, I have to say, when it wasn't really a case of just wearing the right clothes. Actually, if it was minus 60, minus 70, then you simply didn't go out, okay? And there are even times when it's just right to basically knuckle down. And we had time when we got stuck in a storm in Antarctica, and it was literally blowing a hoolie outside for days on end till we ran out of food, minus 70, the only thing you could afford to go out to do for literally a matter of a minute or two at maximum, with like many masks, many, many, many hats on, was to dig the tent out so that you didn't suffocate under all the snow. That was it. So you went to the toilet in the tent, and of course in Antarctica you do that in your plastic bag, and you keep your plastic bag with you, which is because basically the Antarctic Treaty, so you sort of carry your poo around with you, one of those lovely things. But you know, it's that's obviously, you know, in the mountains when it gets cold, but it's the same thing spiritually. I do think there's a lot of parallels. But at the end of the day, there does come a time when all this preparation is good, isn't it? It's lovely to talk about it, and it's lovely to perhaps focus on it and do it and train ourselves in whatever way we think we need to reach people for God. But at the end of the day, we have to leave our comfort zones, don't we? And as John Ortberg said, you know, we've got to get out of the boat. We can't be boat potatoes, yeah? And the thing is that I actually find, I don't know about you, but I actually quite like the boat, because the boat feels safe, doesn't it? And you sit on the edge of it and you play with it, and you might play with I've got friends that I might play with talking to about my faith, but it's really hard to go that full step and really sort of spell things out a bit more. And, you know, it feels, the boat might feel safe, but the question is does that mean it's good? And I know that there's this bit in the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe film where Lucy is asking Mr. and Mrs. Beaver, you know, about Aslan. And she's saying, is he safe? And Mr. Beaver basically says, you know, aren't you listening to Mrs. Beaver? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king, I tell you. And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, sometimes what God does and what we feel we're being called to do might not feel safe, but it's good. Now, there's a saying in Ecclesiastes, you know, he who watches the wind won't plant, and he who watches the clouds won't reap. And sometimes it does feel dangerous, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't jump and trust God. So here's a little bit of me doing a little bit of jumping. Okay, so just a little bit of an illustration there. Now, the thing is that, okay, so it's all very well having passion and being prepared, but we do have to go, don't we? We have to step out of our comfort zones. But, you know, if you're going to be jumping, you're going to be jumping like that or in any other way, you do actually want to be pretty sure that you're attached to your instructor, don't you? And our instructor is our counsellor, the Holy Spirit, and I guess the parachute as well. You know, so when we go, we need to go in the power of the Holy Spirit. This is not just leaping, be it leaping out of an aeroplane. I mean, you know, I was scared But I would have been a whole lot more scared if I'd have just jumped out that aeroplane on my own, I can tell you now. My confidence came from who I was jumping with. I wasn't really jumping in my own strength at all. You know, I went slightly giddy as soon as I left the plane, just that sensation of falling at terminal velocity. So I don't think I would have been much use if I was responsible for pulling the chute. But I went with my instructor. I went in the power of my instructor. You know, and for any of us, there is no point, is there, in us hitting terminal velocity because we're jumping for God if we haven't gone in his power with our guide. And, you know, there's a reason that Jesus said to his disciples, wait here till you're clothed from on high with the power of the Holy Spirit. And that was because he knew it was a big task ahead of the disciples. And that is exactly the same as for, you know, climbing Everest. You know, there was a big task ahead of us and we were going to need power. And I mean, there's lots of things to think about when you're climbing in terms of power that you might need for that. But one of the most important things we needed was actually discernment. We needed to discern what was right, because there was no point in being strong, fit, ready to go, dressed up, if we then went at the wrong time. You know, on Everest, if you get it wrong, not even by a week, not even by a day, if you get it wrong by a few hours, you can just be annihilated by the wind up there if the jet stream comes in and hits you. And, you know, in some respects, it's no different, is it? It's no different to sort of knowing what God's timing is. And here again, this is on actually Denali, Alaska, the highest mountain in North America. And, you know, you can see this avalanche ripping down. And that was literally a question of going at the wrong time of day. Avalanches were going to be going then, and there was tiny people running out of that valley for their lives. Now, because the other thing they could have done, to be a little discerning, is have read the map and discovered that actually that valley was called Death Valley. That might have been a little hint. But, you know, the point is we can know the mechanics of talking to somebody about Jesus and sharing our heart. But, you know, the point is we need to sense God's timing. And it's like Jesus, there was many things he could have done and could have said, but he did what he saw the Father doing. He constantly had the power of discernment in what he was doing. And I know I've got a little nephew, Rowan, who's 5 years old, and he's incredibly cute because he can sail. He sails his own little boat. He's only five, and he goes off on these lakes, and Andy, my brother, watches him, and he shouts, and sometimes he goes out in a boat alongside, and he shouts at Rowan, and he'll tell him, you know, which way to go. But Rowan's formulaic at the moment. He's young. He's sailing by what Daddy tells him to do, shouting to the left and right. But he doesn't really understand how to adjust, how to sense, you know, what's going on with the wind and adjust the sails accordingly. So if Daddy doesn't give him a new instruction, he'll just keep sailing till he hits the island. And of course, Rowan thinks that once he hits land, he basically dismantles the boat. So the fact is, he's not on the mainland and he's dismantled his boat and packed it away and thinks he's done the right thing, but actually is in completely the wrong place. But that's just because he's learning. He's going by formula rather than sensing the timing and what's going on with the wind. And I know for all of us, I know for me in particular, it's just constantly hearing what it is that's right to do and how it is that's right to share with friends. And of course, you know, we don't always get as lucky as Moses and have that kind of burning bush moment. Although, in fairness to Moses, he did have to wait 40 years, didn't he, for that moment. But, you know, we do need that power for our mission. But I think one of the other really important things when it comes to reaching out to people is authenticity. And basically here, we were on Denali in North America and we were being buried by the third storm that went on for about a week this time and we couldn't go anywhere. And basically, you know, on big mountains, as in life, there are always going to be storms and the trick is how we weather them. And I think it's how we weather the storms of our life that bring a level of authenticity to our message that is us and our lives. And it's that is actually a powerful witness to people. And, you know, some people say that, you know, we reach people with words, we proclaim the gospel, we reach them with works, you know, it's how we live. And then others say, no, it's signs and wonders. And but, you know, J. John said, you know, actually, that it's a balance of all three of those things, you know, words, works, and wonders. And he says, you know, we need to integrate all of them in this glorious technicolor swirl of godly intervention. And we do, you know, we diligently pray and work towards all of those three things being true in our lives. But I know, you know, for Rob and me, and I'm sure for all of you, you know, there's times when you do just find it's not easy and you hit storms. And actually, it's how you cope in those stormy moments of life that ends up being a powerful testimony to people, because people watch who you are. They don't just watch who you, what you say. And I know often, you know, as a Christian, you know, you feel that you ought to be living a, you know, a more successful, glorious, blessed life, you know, and be victorious. But so often you don't feel that way. And I know that makes me feel unworthy to talk to people, because I feel, well, maybe I'm not a good demonstration. But actually what people really want, and I know just from personal experiences, what my friends or anybody I talk to appreciates, is basically being who you are, you know, meaning what you say and saying what you mean, because it's a fickle world, isn't it? And people like authenticity. They like to see things lining up. And actually, it's when you, when they see how well you weather the storms and you come out of them, that actually that really does open the door to authentic relationships with people. It's the seedbed for drawing people to follow to Jesus. Now, the next thing is a little bit of fun. Let's face it, okay? This is Rob. He's been stuck in a tent with me for a week. And yeah, we'll say no more. It's pretty obvious why he's looking like that, isn't it? But the point is that, you know, also a very powerful thing is having a sense of humour. And I know, you know, quite often we can get bogged down, you know, but this mission thing is great. You know, God is a God of laughter. You know, he invented it. Okay, and that speaks to people. Okay, laughter is the best therapy. When I was a physio in the NHS, I used to wish I could actually prescribe laughter therapy to people, because I thought this is going to sort people out. You know, and on expeditions, a sense of humour was sometimes one of our most important assets. You know, when we got stuck in terrible storms and we ran out of food, things were looking very tenuous. We were wondering if our tent was actually going to get ripped off the mountain and we were going to be, you know, literally finished off that night. Sometimes we'd end up singing and making up the most stupid games and fooling around. And you wouldn't understand that we were in such a desperate place. But that's because fun, sense of humour was what was getting us through it. And certainly Scott, the great Antarctic explorer before he came to grief, you know, he was in his tent and he was, you know, he was frostbitten, hungry. He was in a desperate state. But he said it would do your heart good to hear our cheery conversation. And that's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes it's our sense of humour and having a bit of fun that keeps us going. And that is a power under our message, because it lets people know that we're normal. Yeah? And that's really important for people to know that. And finally, wearing our own shoes. Well, yes. Now, you might be wondering why I'm saying that, but I think it is incredibly powerful when we are who God has designed us to be and we wear our own shoes. And I had a very painful experience of this when I was skiing to the North Pole, because I borrowed somebody's boots and they were fractionally too big for me. And I ended up with absolutely huge golf balls of inflamed inflammatory pus underneath my Achilles tendons. And basically, I had to ski to the North Pole like this. So very, very uncomfortable. And, you know, the point is that so often in life, it's easy to look at somebody else's life, to look at somebody else's gifts, their talents, how things are going for them, and to attempt to, you know, want that, to emulate it, whatever. But actually, it doesn't fit us. You know, God, you know, God's gift in many respects to us is who we are, and it's what we can become is our gift back to God. And there's, you know, everybody has their own unique skills and giftings, passions and abilities, and it's following those and wearing your own shoes that is actually going to be an incredibly powerful message. Now, I guess it's all very well, isn't it, how being passionate about this and being prepared and going out in God's power. But at the end of the day, we're all going to need one final thing that is what's really going to help bring us through, and that is going to be perseverance. It's just going to be sticking at it. Now, I know quite often people say to us, you know, what's the secret of doing what you've done? You know, and sometimes they might even think there's something different about us and they seemed amazed at what we've done. But I've got to tell you, you know, it really wasn't for want of trying, okay? We had some bad moments. And, you know, really, Rob has scored particularly highly in the Department of Bodily Trials. I mean, this was years ago, but he had multiple leg fractures. And then, of course, as you well know, he's battled cancer twice. And then he's had these moments where we've got stranded in the Himalayas and we had an incredibly close call. And, you know, it seemed a very desperate time when his life was under threat. And Mike Pilavarci says in one of his books, he says, you know, one of the most healthy places to be as a Christian is actually in a complete state of needing God's immediate intervention. And actually, it's when we're unable to carry on our own strength and we're on, you know, 100% dependent on God that we're in the blessed place. But I can tell you, when we were stuck here, I would have explained very clearly what Mike could do with his book, okay? Because, you know, when you are desperate, you know, it's all good in theory, but when you are desperate and you're hanging on by your fingernails, okay, it doesn't feel a good place to be. And yet so often that's where God teaches us and does major changes in our lives. That God didn't intervene in this situation and answered our prayers and got Rob out. But basically, he also had some very unhappy medical moments in foreign countries. And Rob also had far too many of the operations that looked a bit like this. And then even when we were on expedition, it wasn't like it was all straightforward and went well. I mean, sometimes our journeys in and out weren't too straightforward. We had bad moments. And then also, you know, in the midst of when we were supposed to be, you know, gloriously conquering Everest, felt absolutely terrible and had to bail off the expedition. I felt like death on a stick, like it was all over. And then there was Rob, who, you know, when we were in the death zone, simply trying to make a cup of tea that took many hours just to do that simple task, and you felt bad. And then there was the whole deal of just trying to keep your tent on terra firma and not get blown off and strapping it down. So, you know, it wasn't like we didn't have moments when we fell over, and the thing for us was we just had to persevere. And there's a Chinese proverb that says, our greatest glory is not in never falling, but it's in rising every time we fall. And I know it's no different with the Great Commission. And sometimes, you know, I don't manage it perfectly because it's just every time I think, this is how I'm going to talk to people, this is how I'm going to live, I'm going to get it right, and you can't get it right. And I never feel like I get it right to people. But the point is it's not being perfect and getting it right. It's just keeping going. It's persevering. And John Ortberg says, you know, gifts, talents, IQ, to some extent, they're all beyond our control. But endurance is the gift that we can offer. And spiritual transformation for us and for others won't happen without it. And so really, as the Hebrew writer said, you know, let us run that race with perseverance. You know, in other words, just don't quit. But of course, there's times when blind perseverance is not a good idea. This is a situation on Everest. Basically, this gentleman had continued persevering when he possibly should have stopped. Very sadly, on summit day, the day before we summited, this man had gone ahead in some slightly bad weather, and basically he'd sat down to rest and never got up again. He didn't have the strength, and he was on his own. So sometimes there are tragedies and failures, and you know, the point is waiting for the right timing. It's all very well persevering, but again, we do need to wait for the right time. And when we were on Everest, there was the Koreans in particular used to have this summit or die mentality. And I think, you know, it's not helpful on Everest, and to a certain degree, it's not helpful, is it, you know, for us to sort of have this repent or die mentality. We have to really wait for God's timing and persevere in patience. And persevering, of course, is a very noble thing to do in the mountains, but you have to stay roped together. And certainly, you know, this might look obvious that you're not going to fall into this, but most of the times in the mountains, they actually look like this, okay? So you didn't see it until you punched through into it. And this was a bell-shaped chasm that underneath would fit many, many, many of these church buildings into it and still have room for more. And, you know, so we had to be roped up in the mountains. It was no place for loners. And that is so true. When we're reaching out to other people, we've got to stay roped to other people because, you know, we're all vulnerable. At any time, we could pop through that thin layer, whatever it is, and hit something difficult. But I have to say, it wasn't always good being tied together. And, you know, the problem is when you are roped together, it's sometimes a bit messy. Because in the mountains, when you wanted to go to the toilet, everybody had to stop with you together. So imagine that now. Somebody at the back, you'd like to go to the toilet. We've all got to go with you, all right? So there are some downsides to it. But and then finally, without a shadow of a doubt, okay, it is a lot easier to persevere if we remember where it is that we're all heading. You know, and climbing these big mountains in many ways very much like our mission ultimately to reach out to people, to draw them to Jesus, that is so much easier if we remember actually where we're heading. And this, the summit obviously of Everest, that pulled us on in a very practical way, that vision of where we were going. And, it, you know, when we arrived there, it was just an unimaginable reward, not just to be there, the rooftop of the world together, but also because it was literally 3 years to the day that Rob Rob's doctor, after Rob's doctor had said, in the next 3 years, your cancer, you know, there's 50% chance of it coming back. And so for us, it was being like let out of prison. So I think, you know, for all of us, it's that glorious inheritance that pulls us on. Now, of course, should you ever end up in Tibet, okay, and you want to go up a hill for some views, can highly recommend it. And this is the view from the top of Everest. And it really was worth pushing out of our comfort zone for. And you, although this is a fisheye lens, from the top of Everest, you do see this curvature of the earth. And it does feel so incredibly humbling to feel aware that you're this tiny person perched on this planet that is hanging there in the cosmos. And, you know, how you cannot be there and just think, wow, what a God we've got, what a creator to make all of this. It kind of defies logic, but it was a privilege. And when you look up, the atmosphere is so thin that even on a blue sky day, you are looking out into space and you see it's just black because you can't see any of the atmosphere. So you feel like you're poking out into space, and it's a very surreal feeling. Creation really does shout about the glory of God, and sometimes it's reminding ourselves of that that calls us out of our comfort zones, and it calls us to be that message to people. So that is it, guys. And although I don't know what's going to happen now, but I sort of didn't go too much into some video clips this morning, but I will pop some stuff on afterwards once we've finished.